Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 337, titled The Protocols of the Elders of Oil, Part 2. This is being recorded on November 25th of the year 2001. Let me begin the broadcast by reminding listeners that I use a very pedantic format on this program in which I read from documentary sources. Because of that, it's recommended not only that people tape the program, but also that people take a look at the descriptions, which are sourced on the web at www.spitfirelist.com. That's one word, SPITFIRELIST.com. Look in the For the Record section. Also, people can contact that same tape duplication service or CD duplication service called Spitfire, and they can order either tapes and or CDs of the various programs. Also, sister station WFMU in Jersey City, New Jersey, is archiving the For the Record programs on Real Audio. More recent programs are streaming on their website at WFMU.org, and there should be a revision of the URL so that it's WFMU.org/Dave Emery. And there are older programs at a longer URL that are available for download only. There are links on both the Spitfire website and the WFMU.org archive website to that program, to that other URL, and the vast majority of the For the Record programs are available on the WFMU website. Now, in this program, we're going to be talking about some of the power politics of people involved in the petroleum industry, not only in the United States, but elsewhere, in particular in Saudi Arabia. And we're going to begin by taking a look at a case that is, to a certain extent, tangential to the issue of petropolitics, although it overlaps it. We're going to be taking a look at the suspicious murder of a German Verfassungsschutz agent. The Verfassungsschutz is a German domestic intelligence agency, which is in charge with overseeing the security of German democracy. And this Verfassungsschutz agent, Silvan Becker, and his wife were murdered in Libya because they appear to have been following the trail of an Al-Qaeda operative whose name appeared on the list of suspects in the World Trade Center bombing. Again, this is to a certain extent tangential to the issue of the politics of oil, but it is not irrelevant to the line of inquiry that we're conducting here. The following is from the German magazine Focus, issue number 41, from October 8th of the year 2001. This is an article by J. Hufferschulte and C. Talmann, T-H-A-L-M-A-N-N. It's headlined, FBI probe into World Trade Center attack provides fresh lead in case of murdered Verfassungsschutz agent, and it reads in part as follows. American FBI agents investigating the World Trade Center attack have come across a trail that leads directly to the bloody murders of a German anti-terrorist agent and his wife in Tripoli in 1994. Silvan Becker, B-E-C-K-E-R, 56, was the director of the anti-terrorist department of the Verfassungsschutz and worked at its headquarters in Köln. An acknowledged expert on Arab extremism, Herr Becker had spent years examining Islamic terrorist alliances. Eventually, he was transferred to the department responsible for observing Tamil extremists, an assignment that, according to his colleagues, would have deeply frustrated the Arab specialist. In 1994, despite an official ban on traveling, Silvan Becker and his wife Vera made a secret trip to Libya. On March 9, 1994, they were both violently murdered in Tripoli during an apparent robbery. According to the FBI, an alias used by one of the 19 World Trade Center hijackers is identical to the name of a suspect in the Becker case. Now, this, again, is being presented in this context because of the link between Silvan Becker's murder and the murder in the World Trade Center attacks themselves of John P. O'Neill, an FBI counterterrorism official who had been in charge of the investigation into the bin Laden organization, who had had a briefcase burglarized in the summer of 2000, which contained very precise details about every counterterrorist and counterintelligence operation in the New York area. And then John O'Neill resigned his position with the FBI, became director of the World director of security for the World Trade Center, and was killed in the attacks. And as we're going to take a look at in this following article, Mr. O'Neill's name and his complaints about the politics of the elders of oil, so to speak, appears in a French book in which the murder of Silvan Becker and his wife is also discussed, and apparently it was on the warrant, the Interpol warrant for the arrest of Sylvan Becker's murderers, that the name of bin Laden first appeared on an international warrant. The following is from the New York Times of Monday, November 12th of the year 2001. This article is by Ethan Bronner, B-R-O-N-N-E-R. It's headlined, Oil Diplomacy Muddled U.S. Pursuit of Bin Laden, New Book Contends, and it reads in part as follows. A former FBI anti-terror official who was killed at the World Trade Center on September 11th complained bitterly last summer that the United States was unwilling to confront Saudi Arabia over Osama bin Laden, and that oil ruled American foreign policy, according to a new book published in France. The former official, John P. O'Neill, was the director of anti-terrorism for the FBI's New York office when he resigned in August to become chief of security for the Twin Towers. Quote, all the answers, everything needed to dismantle Osama bin Laden's organization can be found in Saudi Arabia, unquote. Mr. O'Neill is quoted as saying in the new book, Bin Laden, La Vérité Interdite, Bin Laden, The Forbidden Truth, which argues that Saudi support for Mr. Bin Laden has been extensive. One of the book's co-authors, Jean-Charles Brizard, B-R-I-S-A-R-D, a security expert who has spent several years examining Mr. Bin Laden's financial empire, says in the book that he met with Mr. O'Neill in June and July. Mr. O'Neill is quoted as lamenting, quote, the inability of American officials to get anything at all from King Fahd, unquote, the ailing Saudi ruler. He explains the failure in one word, oil. And in For the Record Program 325 and in number 326, I suggested that Mr. O'Neill had been in fact, doubled on by elements within the U.S. intelligence and law enforcement and political infrastructures, which were in fact in sympathy with not only bin Laden, but also what I call the underground Reich. And this new book published in France would appear to lend credence to that hypothesis. More from this article, skipping down. The book by Mr. Brizard, written with Guillaume Dasquier, a journalist, also makes public for the first time the first international warrant for the arrest of Mr. bin Laden. It is a 1998 Interpol document from Libya. The so-called Red Notice, file number 1998/20032, accuses Mr. bin Laden and three Libyans of killing two Germans in Libya in 1994. The book identifies the victims as Sylvan Becker and his wife and says they were German anti-terror agents. I would note in that context that the Libyan Secret Service, as we looked at in For the Record Programs numbers 3 and 22, had been put together, and also For the Record Program number 283, had been put together by the Heinrich Mueller Intelligence Outfit that served as the intelligence component of the remarkable and deadly Bormann Organization, the Underground Reich's economic and political component. And by Underground Reich, I mean quite literally a Third Reich gone underground. Still more about the politics of the Elders of Oil and some shocking allegations that are contained in that book. Again, Bin Laden, La Vérité Interdite, Bin Laden, The Forbidden Truth. Some further disclosures about the allegations made in that book are carried in an article entitled U.S. Policy Towards Taliban Influenced by Oil. This is by Julio Goday, G-O-D-A-Y. It's datelined Paris, November 15th of 2001. And this was published by the Interpress Service. And you can visit their website and access this article at www.ips.org. The article reads in part as follows. Under the influence of U.S. oil companies, the government of George W. Bush initially blocked U.S. Secret Service investigations on terrorism while it bargained with the Taliban over the delivery of Osama bin Laden in exchange for political recognition and economic aid, two French intelligence analysts claim. In the book Bin Laden, La Vérité Interdite, Bin Laden, The Forbidden Truth, that appeared in Paris on Wednesday, the authors, Jean-Charles Brizard and Guillaume Dasquier, revealed that the Federal Bureau of Investigation's deputy director, John O'Neill, resigned in July in protest over the obstruction. Brizard claimed O'Neill told them that, quote, The main obstacles to investigating Islamic terror were U.S. oil corporate interests and the role played by Saudi Arabia in them, unquote. The two claim that the U.S. government's main objective in Afghanistan was to consolidate the position of the Taliban regime to obtain access to the oil and gas reserves in Central Asia. They reaffirm that until August, the U.S. government saw the Taliban regime, quote, as a source of stability in Central Asia that would enable the construction of an oil pipeline across Central Asia, unquote, from the rich oil fields in Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, and Kazakhstan to Afghanistan and Pakistan to the Indian Ocean. Until now, says the book, quote, the oil and gas reserves of Central Asia have been controlled by Russia. The Bush government wanted to change all that, unquote. But, confronted with Taliban's refusal to accept U.S. conditions, again quoting, this rationale of energy security changed into a military one, unquote, the authors claim. Again quoting, at one moment during the negotiations, the U.S. representatives told the Taliban, quote, either you accept our offer of a carpet of gold or we bury you under a carpet of bombs, unquote, Blizzard said in an interview in Paris. According to the book, the government of Bush began to negotiate with the Taliban immediately after coming into power in February. That actually would have been in January, but that's a slight detail here. Continuing. Actually, no, that according to the French translation, the negotiations would have been in February. Excuse me. This is originally an article. This article was originally published in French. Continuing. U.S. and Taliban diplomatic representatives met several times in Washington, Berlin, and Islamabad. To polish their image in the United States, the Taliban even employed a U.S. expert on public relations, Laila Helms. That's spelled L-A-I-L-A. The authors claim that Helms is also an expert in the works of U.S. Secret Services, for her uncle, Richard Helms, is a former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA. The last meeting between U.S. and Taliban representatives took place in August, 5 weeks before the attacks on New York and Washington, the analysts maintain. On that occasion, Christina Rocca, R-O-C-C-A, in charge of Central Asian Affairs for the U.S. government, met the Taliban ambassador to Pakistan in Islamabad. Blizzard and Dasquier have long experience in intelligence analysis. Blizzard was until the late 1990s director of economic analysis and strategy for Vivendi, a French company. He also worked for French Secret Services and wrote in 1997 for them a report on the now-famous Al-Qaeda network headed by bin Laden. Dasquier is an investigative journalist and publisher of Intelligence Online, a respected newsletter on diplomacy, economic analysis, and strategy available through the Internet. According to that allegation, there were negotiations that were being conducted between the Taliban and the Bush administration concerning turning over bin Laden in exchange for a lucrative guarantee of wealth in connection with a pipeline that we discussed in For the Record program number 334 that is being proposed and now perhaps, yea, verily, even as we speak, underwritten by British Petroleum, Unocal, in which the elder George Bush has a stake, and the Saudi government. The Saudi government strongly connected to not only the Bush family, but obviously the petroleum industry, and also to the bin Laden family. And so, according to this particular article, which is in turn accessing information from bin Laden, the Forbidden Truth, the Bush administration was in negotiations with the Taliban, who in turn were allegedly using Laila Helms, the niece of Richard Helms, the former CIA director, as a basically as a public relations expert. That is a very, very interesting allegation indeed, and it's one that certainly bears further investigation. Again, I am not obviously in a position to comment authoritatively on its accuracy. It does fit in very closely with a great many other things that are known. I noted in For the Record program 308 and later in 315 that the Bush administration gave the Taliban $43 million in May, and I also noted that Arnaud de Borgrave, former editor of of the Moon-owned Washington Times, and the Moon organization itself has strong connections to the Bush family. Arnaud de Borgrave was allegedly headed to Afghanistan in May to interview Osama bin Laden, and I noted not only Arnaud de Borgrave's strong connections to the Bush milieu, his strong connections to the milieu of the intelligence community, and also wondered aloud why Arnaud de Borgrave would be allowed to meet with bin Laden when an individual of de Borgrave's status might very well have been used to compromise bin Laden. And one wonders again whether perhaps de Borgrave's alleged interview with bin Laden might have had something to do with these particular negotiations. One of the things that we've spoken about in a number of different broadcasts, including For the Record number 329 and other programs dealing with Wahhabism, the ultra-fanatical sect of Islam that is promoted in Saudi Arabia, and that was described in an article that we looked at in For the Record number 329 as, quote, Islamo-fascism. We're going to read an article now, or we're going to excerpt an article now from the German press, which discusses not only Wahhabism, but Osama bin Laden's pretense to being the successor to Wahhabism. And beyond that, we're going to take a look at the bin Laden affiliations, that's Osama bin Laden affiliations, not only with Crown Prince Abdullah, the primary member, I guess one could say, of the Saudi royal family, and someone who has strong connections to the Bush family. We're going to take a look, too, at Osama bin Laden's connections with Prince Turki, that's Turki, the outgoing or outgone chief of Saudi intelligence, who was replaced the week before the 9/11 attacks. Research credit on the following goes to Dave White, our pan-European researcher and translator, who got this from the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung of September 24th of 2001. This article is by Rainer Hermann, and it's headlined, The Battle Over Ibn Abdul Wahhab, and this, of course, alludes to Wahhabism. The article reads in part as follows. Osama bin Laden threatens not just the United States, he also poses a significant threat to the Saudi royal family. The threat emanates from his claim in the face of everyone to be the legitimate heir of 18th century religious scholar Ibn Abdul Wahhab, and therefore entitled to reestablish his teachings of radical Islamic renewal. Bin Laden's pretense threatens the family al-Saud, which finds its legitimacy in and owes its political ascendancy to a symbiosis with Ibn Abdul Wahhab and his descendants. It is a question of power. Will the family Saud relinquish its monopoly on Wahhabism? And after discussing bin Laden's forced emigration from Saudi Arabia and his loss of citizenship, the article goes on to comment, but bin Laden's personal contacts in Saudi Arabia certainly didn't cease. One such contact is Prince Turki bin Abdul Aziz, the Saudi intelligence chief who previously was the 1957-born Saudi's mentor in the 80s. Prince Turki and bin Laden have met each other time and time again since 1994. Among other things, the intelligence chief was supposed to try to moderate bin Laden's behavior. And skipping down still further, note again the affinity here between Prince Turki and bin Laden, according to this article. And by the way, the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung is considered the most credible of the German dailies, sort of the New York Times of Germany, so to speak. And note its discussion here not only about the fact that, its allegation that Prince Turki, the now deposed chief of Saudi intelligence, was Osama bin Laden's mentor, but that they had met time and time again in the recent past. Skipping down still further in this article, in his criticism of the House of Saud's leadership, bin Laden always excludes Crown Prince Abdullah bin Abdul Al-Aziz, who leads a lifestyle compatible with Islam and will not involve himself in corruption. I would add this is, to a certain extent, spin. I will leave it to the reader's judgment as to what extent he leads a lifestyle compatible with Islam. He may not engage in prostitution or other forms of vice, but he certainly does have some very, very interesting connections to the corridors of power here in the Great Satan, so to speak, as Islamic extremists view the United States. Before we get to discussion of Crown Prince Abdullah himself, bear in mind that the Saudi chief of intelligence for 20 years, Prince Turki, was Osama bin Laden's mentor for many years. We're going to review an article that we looked at in For the Record program number 330. This is from the San Francisco Chronicle of Monday, September 24th of the year 2001. It's by Patrick E. Tyler of the New York Times, and it's headlined, Strains in Saudi-U.S. Relations, subtitled Royal Family Must Balance Role as Muslim Leader with Ties to U.S., and it reads in part as follows. But there are other currents in the royal family that have been difficult to discern. One of them was the sudden removal this summer of Prince Turki al-Faisal, the kingdom's chief of intelligence for more than 20 years. He was replaced by Prince Nawaf bin Abdulaziz, King Fahd's brother. And we're going to review a piece of information that we looked at in For the Record program number 334, The Protocols of the Elders of Oil, Part 1, about when that chief of intelligence, Prince Turki, Osama bin Laden's mentor, was removed. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from the Washington Post of Sunday, September 9th of 2001. Now, bear in mind when you hear the reference to last week, this article was published 2 days before the attacks. This was published on September 9th, so the events that you're going to hear described here took place the week before the attacks. This is an op-ed column by Jim Hoagland, H-O-A-G-L-A-N-D. It's headlined, Status Quo in the Persian Gulf, and it reads in part as follows. When Saudi Arabia's intelligence chief was dumped last week, and a prince a generation older named as his successor, Washington's Middle East analysts speculated furiously about how it changed succession and power balances in the royal family. So bear in mind that the week before the attacks, the Saudi Arabian mentor and their of Osama bin Laden and their intelligence chief was suddenly dumped. And as the article here notes, continuing, a series of unusually high-profile public warnings of a regional explosion came from the normally somber foreign minister Saud al-Faisal and added to the sense here that something is stirring in the desert kingdom. Now, still more interesting is an earlier version of this same column, and I want to give a major tip of the hat to a sharp-eyed listener who researched both versions of this for us. This is an earlier version of the very same Jim Hoagland column that was titled, actually it's an op-ed piece from the Washington Post, but this was titled Mysteries in the Persian Gulf. It was later titled Status Quo in the Persian Gulf, and I want to note, both URLs, because according to this listener, the version that I'm about to read was suppressed. I certainly did not see this in the national edition of the Washington Post, the hard copy from which I excerpted in For the Record 334. And according to the listener, the article is not listed in the online archives of the Washington Post. Now, both of these articles have the same prefix, www.washingtonpost.com/AC2/WP-DYN/, and then there is a difference. The following version has the following URL, after www.washingtonpost.com/AC2/WP-DYN/, we have the following. Capital A, 63148-2001, September 8th, ? Lowercase language equals printer, lowercase. And I'm mentioning that URL because this version, titled by the Washington Post, suppressed in their national edition and not listed in their online archives, was called Mysteries in the Persian Gulf, and it contains two sentences that the previous version did not. But the biggest and most unpleasant shock came when Saudi Defense Minister Prince Sultan canceled the annual August U.S.-Saudi joint military exercise only hours before it was to begin without explanation. A Pentagon spokesman declined comment, telling me the information was classified. Information on such exercises with other nations is routinely publicized by the Pentagon. So according to this suppressed version of the article, hours before they were to begin, the Saudis, without explanation, canceled joint military exercises with the United States. And that is very, very interesting indeed. What we're going to do next is to take a look at events pertaining to the Israeli-Palestinian issue, and we're going to be taking a look at some of the networking that takes place within the corridors of the petroleum industry, and we will be looking again at the protocols of the Elders of Oil. However, we're going to do that on side two of the program. Let me remind you, first of all, that the CDs and tapes of these programs are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. The email address is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. There is a list of and description of the various programs available on the Spitfire website, and that website is www.spitfirelist.com. And in the For the Record section, there are sourced descriptions of all of the For the Record programs about the 9-1-1 attacks, beginning with For the Record 325 and continuing on up. The Spitfire website is also equipped with real audio, and they will ship programs to radio stations that want to carry this broadcast free of charge. As I mentioned, also, sister station WFMU.org, sister station WFMU is archiving the For the Record programs on real audio. More recent programs are streaming on their website at WFMU.org. Look in their archives section and look for Dave Emery. And there are older programs that are available for download only on the WFMU website. There are links between the For the Record section of the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com and the other WFMU website and the download only, so to speak, URL. We're going to continue with this discussion in the second half of the program. This concludes side one of For the Record program number 337, The Protocols of the Elders of Oil, part two. This is being recorded on November 25th of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.